Hi, welcome to the Design Thinking Roundtable, a podcast which explores various aspects of design and how it can create change and social impact. I'm Anne Fayard, an ethnographer who researches, teaches, and practices human-centered design with a focus on social innovation and collaboration. And I love having conversations on design with passionate and mindful designers. Today, I have the pleasure to be in conversation with Harmony Coleman. Harmony is a senior community engagement manager at IDEO.org. In this role, she collaborates closely with design teams, partners, and local community members to advance equitable practices in design research and community co-design methods across the organization. She specializes in designing transformative experiences, healing-centered facilitation, participatory design methods, and recruiting community members with lived experience. Her past experiences as a teacher and community organizer both deepen her expertise and ground her current work and interests. Harmony has a Master of Education from Harvard University and a Bachelor in Psychology and Race and Difference Studies from Emory University. So Harmony, thanks so much for joining us on the Design Thinking Roundtable. Very excited to be able to know more about your experience as a community designer. So I'd like to get started with your current role as a senior community engagement manager at IDEO.org, understanding really what this role entails, because it's, you know, kind of an interesting role. And then also you've been a teacher, community organizer before that. And I'm really interested in understanding, you know, what's been your journey from teaching, community organizing to participatory design and facilitation.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Happy to be here. I think I'll start with a language point, which I'll probably repeat myself throughout this, but teaching and facilitation, they're very similar, you know, crafts. They are different, but they have a lot of the same foundational skill sets. And then with participatory design and community organizing, there's a lot of overlap there. So with design, of course, we think about, you know, doing design research, getting an understanding of what users want from the experience, or participants want from the experience. And then with community organizing, you have canvassing. You go around, you knock on your neighbor's door. Hey, so-and-so, you know, what do you want to work on? What are you interested in changing about your neighborhood? And so you're getting an understanding of, you know, what folks want in that current moment. So there's lots of, I think, natural overlap there, but we just call them different things. I think I noticed that when I first started in the design field. And so with that, my current role, the official title, like you said, is Senior Community Engagement Manager. And so with that, it's a very fun title. It's actually the first of its kind at the organization. So, you know, we're building the plane while we're flying the plane, you know, one of those things. And so I really have like four different modes I think I operate in. And so sitting at the intersection of design research and co-design, working with design teams, working with the partnerships team, and then also thinking about org-wide skills or toolkits that we might need. So I might serve like an advisor to a design team. Maybe we're doing a co-design sprint and we're thinking about how to do recruitment really well and equitably. And so I'll boost on that project and really serve as, you know, a thought partner in that work. And then if it's like a really, you know, a deep or intensive co-design project, I might actually serve as a core design team member and carry on some more of the facilitation, thinking about workshop design, experience design, how to make those things super joyful and rich for participants. And then with our partnerships team, thinking about how do we win like a co-design project. And so helping with proposal writing or thinking about scoping. And then once we've won that project, okay, how do we scope thoughtfully for co-design? So it does take a lot more time thinking about recruitment, how many sessions we need, how long it might take to do like all the consent forms and all these different things. And then with org-wide tools, just all the toolkits and, you know, kind of compiling all of our tried and true co-design methods and favorite tools there. So lots of fun, but that's the day-to-day.
I really like the language point, and definitely, you know, as someone who is teaching, the facilitation and teaching overlap completely makes sense. So it seems to me that you're really kind of, you know, boundary spanners across, you know, so multiple fields, but always with this kind of, you know, working around relationships and thinking about how to trigger or nurture relationships. And so, you know, I reach out to you after reading your post on community and ode to community co-design and Sharon Louise Pinkston. And in this essay that is truly inspiring to me, you talk about intentional relationship building, and it resonated very much with me, as I believe it's really essential more and more to move from these kind of transactive interactions to intentional relationship. And so I really would like you to, you know, maybe expand on this notion and how we build them. And you talk about in the post, I think, of a project you worked on with families and youth who have been impacted by the child welfare system. So maybe, you know, you could use that as an example.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for mentioning the essay. It's really special and important to me. I got to write about my grandmother who passed away, about 5 years ago now, which feels very odd to me. But I think about just how much I learned from her. And I don't think I, you know, realized it at the time because I was a kid, but she has had like this beautiful way of talking to people and getting to know them. Like, she never met a stranger. We could be at the grocery store and I would think that she would have known this person like for her whole life, but she just met them on aisle 11. So it's very fascinating. And so I think a lot of my skill set is really ancestral, and it comes from, you know, watching my elders just be very thoughtful and patient and really care about people in ways that I don't think is the norm now that I'm older. And so in my most recent work at IDEO.org, we worked with the child welfare system. And so we work with the State Department and a county level department. And so with that, we were recruiting folks who had lived experience of the system. People have been harmed by the child welfare system in some way, which is hard. You know, I don't think even though we really did find people that were excited about making change in the system, I don't know that it's an easy undertaking to then work against something or commit yourself to seeing the possibility in a system that harmed you, right? And so we were doing really deep work there and starting with recruitment. And so actually I was hired originally as a program manager at IDEO.org. And so I was the program manager of this child welfare project, and I was actually hired to do the recruitment, the community management piece, which to me, I was like, oh, you know, this is easy. This is what I do. I can just talk to people. But at that point, like, we had been really struggling with recruitment. So I remember just like, you know, getting out my phone, hitting people on WhatsApp, texting, calling folks that I don't think that, you know, people have been doing up to that point, using Zoom when it worked, but also knowing that, you know, we're working with people who maybe don't use a computer every day or have never used Zoom. So why not call? Why not text? And really thinking of that first conversation as like an equal meeting point, like allowing people to get to know us and what we're trying to do, as well as us trying to get to know them. And if they're really interested and are able to commit the time that's needed to really take on the design work. So we had different questions around, like, you know, what makes you feel safe in different moments? What might be songs that you'd want to hear in different design sessions, and thinking about music as a tool for healing or connection or joy, which I myself love a playlist. So that was natural too. And just thinking about, you know, as many moments or as opportunities as we have to really infuse care into the design process. So thinking about payment, I think a lot of times that's something that people are like, oh, you know, it's very administrative. We get it done. But, you know, it really doesn't matter that we are paying people equitably and paying them on time and making it very clear why we are doing these things, especially when we're working with folks who have lived experience and maybe not quote unquote professional experience in a certain area. So thinking about, you know, those things that I think maybe seem minuscule, but actually are super important, like consent forms, even starting on time, being honest about how much time we're asking of folks, and just being super clear at the outset And I think when you're clear about those things, it then creates space for you to really be present and show up and build relationships with people. And we were working with folks, let's see, I started two Junes ago. And the program ran for like 9 months until the following April. And so we were meeting with 30 people who had lived experience of the system for 9 months. And so we really got to know them, you know, quite well. It was like I was talking to my aunt or my grandmother or my mom in some moments. They just reminded me of people, you know, that I knew and I loved. And I remember one of my coworkers, he would always say, facilitate like your loved ones are in the room, you know, and think of these people as, you know, people that you care for. And I think over time, that's what happened. We really did create beautiful relationships with these folks and imagined, you know, a future beyond the child welfare system and really imagined a future for family well-being and started to create prototypes that would get us to that future. And so we spent those 9 months, you know, working through the design process in that way. And I think the relationships that we built created the space for us to do that.
You know, you just mentioned the temporality of a project. You know, it's 9 months and it takes time to build relationship. Do you feel that that was enough and that less would have been, you know, hurting the relationship? Because, you know, we started the pre-recording talking about how, you know, time is socially constructed, but also how it creates, you know, meaning.
Mm-hmm. I think there's ways to use it to your advantage when you have more time, but also be mindful of it, perhaps, when you have less. And so with my first program, it was almost a year of work. With the second child welfare project we did, that was only 2 months. And so, of course, they were like much, much different. But the outcomes in many ways were the same. Like we got to, I think, the same level of fidelity with some of the insights or the prototypes that we created. Mm-hmm. Lots of similarities around families, you know, wanting continual healing support after they've been impacted by the system, or wanting another number to call outside of the child welfare system so they don't have to call and then risk losing their kids in some way. And so I think even though, of course, the timing was different, I think we were able to get to that same level. And that was due really to some deep partnership work, I think, with our implementing partners and our funders. And then also, again, thinking about clarity ahead of time and with the people that we were working with. And so working, you know, with them and being upfront, like, hey, workshop one is this, workshop two is this. And so instead of maybe taking a week or 2 weeks on one thing, we're spending like 3 hours in person together. And I should also say the second one was an in-person project, whereas the first one was all on Zoom. And so there are things there too, where it's like, okay, how are time and space, you know, really working in this way? How are they working against us and how are they working in our favor? I think in using both as much as possible to make the design process meaningful for folks.
I think that what you were insisting on this kind of details, but that's really where the difference comes, because that's where the intentionality is. So I think it's, and then the point you made about transparency and expectations for the participants, which is suddenly, you know, about your positionality also and recognizing them a role and a space. So thank you very much. So, you know, as I was reading your post, but even just like since we started talking, you know, participatory design, community design, co-designs, you know, are all these terms that you've used and that are often referred to when talking about social innovation and impact. And, you know, there are variations and people can write about, you know, how participatory design is slightly different than community design or co-design, but they all reflect, you know, this movement from moving from designing for to designing with the beneficiaries. But also recently, and I know you've been in touch, you're in touch with Sarah Fetella. And so, you know, people like Sarah, social activists, designers, have been kind of pushing a little bit beyond these calls for designing with and challenging what they really mean and reminding us that we have to be aware about power dynamics that are existing, embedded, you know, and hard to ignore. and the need to even decolonize participatory design. So based on your experience with community engagement and activism, as well as your, you know, your interest in ethnic studies and equity, I'm curious to have your perspective on this. So it's a big topic, but I'd love to have your perspective on that.
Yes, it is a big topic. And I think my overarching thought was I was listening to you kind of present the questions that in design and perhaps in other disciplines as well, but design specifically, I think we have a bit of a tendency to over-intellectualize in ways that are not always helpful. And so even thinking about the different terms, right, participatory design, co-design, community design, words matter, yes, and I think that it's important that we are actually practicing these practices before we're moving to truly bucket and name them super clearly. So that's one thought. I think another thought that I learned from being a teacher, I was working with really all ages, I think, throughout my teaching journey, but primarily middle school and high school, and later at an all-girls high school where I was teaching ethnic studies. And with that, I learned that how we do things is, if not more important as the what or the outcome. And so thinking about, you know, how we're setting up a classroom for safety, how we're greeting kids in the morning when they come in, what music is playing. I'm a big music girl, as you can tell. Even the assignments that we're giving, right, and like how we're presenting them, like is it an assignment or is it an opportunity to showcase your new talents and skills you've demonstrated over the years, right? And so really thinking about the process and privileging that, I think, over the product at times is a way to really think about what decolonizing actually looks like. I think we live in a culture where we're moving very fast all the time, and we're thinking about deadlines and structure. And I think capitalism has a lot to do with that. I think white supremacy has a lot to do with that and how we're always thinking about what things look like rather than how we got there. And so with that, I know when I first started in design, there was a big, of course, human-centered design is like the main thing. And I think we've kind of shifted to more participatory and to more co-design. But with that, I think that requires that I'm moving away from some of those HCD frameworks or skills or tools or practices that we might have used. So you can't use HCD tools to really do a co-design process super well. It requires new ways of thinking, new mindsets, new practices. Yeah, and so I think there's a clear shift that needs to happen there, as well as thinking about, you know, who was in the space before us and where we're kind of getting these processes from. You think about design, and again, I was not a trained designer, and so I was always thinking, like, what is design to me? What does that actually mean? And I think I've landed on, you know, designing is problem solving. We're getting into a space and we're thinking about what the solution is. And so with that, a lot of these things we're doing are not new. Like they come from our elders or people have been doing them for decades in different social movements or in community organizing spaces. And I think remembering that and kind of getting out of our own way or minimizing ego as much as possible is super important in the work.
I'm with you with the, you know, being agnostic about jargons. Because I think then we can, you know, just get into battles. And I really like the idea of a process and focusing on the how. Because then, as you said, you know, then you might change the tools, because what really matters is the how. So, and a call for humility, which is never bad to be remembered. So when I was reading your essay, you know, I kept thinking of a book that I had read a couple of months before, Emerging Strategy by Adrienne Murray Brown. So when I arrived at the end of the essay and I saw, you know, the book listed as recommended reading and I saw her book, I was like, oh, of course, you know, so I was very excited. And when I thought of this conversation, I thought, oh, you know, I'd like to have her perspective on some of the quotes that I like about this book. So there's one that I think, and it goes to the how, so that's a perfect transition. Changing our how more than seeing clearly our what, And then a bit later, how we are at the small scale is how we are at the large scale. And what we practice at the small scale sets the patterns for the whole system. And I'd just like to see how does it resonate with your, you know, individual and maybe and potentially professional practice.
Well, one, I loved that you loved my book list. I feel like I'm constantly throwing books at people. I think if I didn't become a teacher or a designer, I would have loved to be a librarian. And perhaps one day, you know, we'll still do that. So thank you for appreciating the book list. I love Adrienne Marie Brown's work. I remember reading Emergent Strategy, maybe when I was in graduate school, and just being like, wow. I wish I would have come up with this, or I wish I would have encountered this kind of thinking earlier. And I think the way she writes in that book is just so clear and gives such a clear path, you know, to world building, to creating the future that we all want to live in. And it's also a really, I think, great textbook in a way for systems change. You know, we're always talking about systems innovation, systems transformation. But I think how she said it there in that quote is the blueprint, like how we do things every day or how we do things repeatedly, how we show up in the small moments is how we are overall. And I think about that a lot, of course, the design process, because there's so many, like I was saying earlier, there's so many moments where you can think, how can I intentionally center joy in this moment? How can I rethink this moment and structure it for maximum equity? And as designers, we do have, you know, power in those small interactions to really shift how people are, who is in power in those moments, and decentering ourselves a lot of the time. And I used to say this a lot with my team when they were probably tired of me saying this, but I used to say that institutional change follows interpersonal and internal change. And so if you yourself are not changed in some way by the work that you're doing, then the work you did probably is not that great, because the process, you know, the transformation of the self didn't occur. And I think that when we're doing social change work, it requires like really deep reflection of the own role that we play, of our own biases, of how we can show up for others. And if we're not really being in deep reflection about that, then the work will be severely negatively impacted. And so I remember this really cool moment. We were kind of reflecting with the co-designers from one of the child welfare projects that we did. And this was the 9-month one. So we'd spent a long time together. And we were doing a bit of evaluation. And one of the co-designers said, you know, I really do feel like I'm a better parent after being a part of this process. And I was like, what the heck? Like, what have we done here? You know, like, that's so cool for someone to be able to say that. And of course, that's hard to quantify, right? But I think being able to impact how someone is showing up for their kid or for their sister or a family member, those are things that have really big ripple effects and do eventually, again, create this future that we all want to live in together. And so I think Adrienne Marie Brown's quote is just, it's just perfect. I would scream it from the rooftops if I could. I think it's beautiful.
Librarian is also on my list of, you know, what I want to be when I'm a grown up. but I, you know, I also think, you know, there's the empowerment also of like realizing that sometimes, you know, you might see system change and you're like, wow, it's so difficult. But like suddenly you're like, well, I can start here now. And I think that's what I really liked about her book. It's like, you know, giving us like agency to a certain extent. Yes, but we, you know, we can do it right now. We don't need to wait until, you know, we have everything perfect. And in fact, we should not wait. Because if not, it's never going to start.
Yeah. And there are ways to partner, you know, with each other and work together, you know, to get there, which I think I find strength in as well. We don't have to do it alone. There are other people that we can partner with and go
far. That's also a big point,
in her book.
Yeah.
And which go back to your point about, you know, community and participatory design connected to relationships. So I guess if we go back to the intentional relationship point, an underlying kind of principle is also that if you co-design, then you know, everybody is engaged in the process, and it's not like, it's not only you helping or leaving the other one doing it, so you're in it together.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a way of, I think, about, you know, shifting power. I think if we think about these processes in that way, it makes it a bit easier. Like, okay, if we're truly co-designing, that means that everyone who's in it, you know, has equal power in that moment. We're in a key decision-making power moment. And if that's not the case, then are we really co-designing? You know, these are things that we have to consider in thinking about how to not just center lived expertise, but actually elevate it, I think, to the way that we treat professional or learned expertise, which is another way of decolonizing design, thinking about, you know, other funds of knowledge or ways of knowing that I don't think we often privilege in our society.
You know, to conclude, I think that the, you know, what I really liked at the end of your essay was this like list of recommended readings. And it seems that, you know, you like sharing these lists. So I was wondering if you had like any books, I don't know, 3-5 books that, you know, you really like and you would want to share with our audience.
Yes. So on the Adrienne Marie Brown point, she also has a book called Holding Change, The Way of Emergent Strategy, Facilitation and Mediation. And so if emergent strategy, like the original text is like the vision or the textbook, I think that Holding Change is the toolkit. So there's so much wisdom in there. I feel like I look at it, I don't know, like once a week, and I'm bookmarking pages and underlining and like really using it tangibly in my work, which is super helpful. So highly recommend that. I also recently stumbled upon this essay, probably from like 2021. So it's not super new, but I still think it's very relevant, from Sara Fatala and A.D. Sean Lewis, I believe they wrote it. It's Abolish the Cop Inside Your Designer's Head, which, what a title. You know, I think it's really well done. And so similarly, I think they lay out, you know, a clear vision for what abolition in design looks like and like how we're limiting the carceral state. And then at the end, beautiful, they have like steps or practices that you can try in your own design practice. Yeah. And I'm like, how generous was this? You know, it's just very thoughtful. It really spoke to my brain. And so I think that's a great resource to check out. And just really thinking about how, I think with abolition in particular, it's like a really big word. It's a vision that we don't always know how to get to. But like you were saying earlier, there are ways we can start now in our own sphere of influence that do have, you know, a larger impact down the road. So love that piece. And then Priya Parker's The Art of Gathering. It's something I also return to often. It's really helpful with community design, thinking about, you know, why we're actually getting people together. She talks about this in the book, but she says, like, you know, are you having a dinner party or are you celebrating the fact that you have a new apartment and you want to bring all your friends together? You know, those are two different purposes besides just wanting to throw a dinner party. So I think being super clear about why you're gathering, when you're gathering, then, of course, impacts how well the gathering goes, which is helpful with facilitation work and workshop design.
I had already bookmarked all of these on my list of readings. So, you know, I really want to thank you. First, I'm really glad that you shared your thoughts on the blog. You know, I sometimes tell my students, you should, you know, if you really like something, just write to the person and who knows, they might respond. And so I was very excited when you responded. So thanks for, you know, responding and for taking the time today to share. And so just quickly, what I really got was this idea of, you know, the importance of intention as an intentions to detail, but also reflective practice, as well as a communication, transparency, you know, clear expectations. I think all of this goes with intention. The how versus the what, you know, thinking about the process and not being stuck on the jargon or the templates. And just, you know, being humble and just showing up to do the work. So thank you so much for sharing with me and also with our audience.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Design Thinking Roundtable produced by the DESIS Lab and ERA Chair in Social Innovation at Nova SBE in partnership with the Design Lab at NYU Makerspace. This episode was recorded at Fidelidad Creative Studio. If you think this episode might be of interest to someone in your community, feel free to share it. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.